l'eau. Soleil contre amour envieux. Soleil masqué par une face blêmie. Qui par trois jours a retenu mamie. Seul au logis par un temps pluvieux.
Welcome to Nina, Hannah, and Emily in Paris, the show no one asked for about the show no one asked for. I'm Nina.
I'm Hannah.
Welcome to our latest episode. This time we're going to be talking about Emily in Paris in the cultural conversation. This is part of our out-of-office extended second season where we do little deeper dives. We've got a good episode for you today.
I'm so excited about this episode. We're talking about an article that was published in Variety in 2021, but it's still relevant as we look towards season three. So enjoy.
Let's do this.
Hi.
Hi.
You're not feeling well, but you're here.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. Isn't that, that's like how the last 2.5 years could be summarized.
Yeah, I'm not feeling well, but here I am, I guess. I'm functional.
Well, you're high functioning.
Yes, I am high functioning. I am high functioning, but I am low eating, moving. Some of my most base functions like actually aren't functioning too well without going into too much detail. But I would say like energy wise, like I can hang.
I can be a good hang. Just a little nauseous.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think I'm getting my period. So it's not the same thing, but I feel like a little cloudy the way that, but I think I felt that way the last time we had an episode. So just at the outset, saying to our listeners, sorry, we were a little low energy, you know, for the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, but I feel like when I'm getting my period, it's like...
You get revved up?
I do get revved up, but I also feel like it is a full, pretty full week of pre, or at least like the 3 days prior, like stuff gets pretty dark.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way where I'm every single... I think we've talked about this. And I know that it's been talked about culturally, medically.
But not enough.
But it gets very, very dark for like 3 or 4 days where I'm like, what am I doing here? What is life?
Mm-hmm.
And then every time I'm like, oh my God. Silly.
It was just that.
Silly.
It was just that all the time. I know. Trickster. Having to like ride the wave of that hormonal chaos so frequently is just like... I just, you know, I love people who get their periods. I really do. I think we're stronger.
Do you think that a woman could be president? Like if she was dealing with that, like what if there's going to be nuclear war?
And then they would like, cause then they'd push that button.
Yeah.
That big red button. I know that's it'd be so bad. Honestly, here's what I'll say. I don't want the presidency for any woman. It sounds like a bad job. I think that we could benefit from not having a cis dude be the president, but I don't want that for them. I think I'm a high functioning period person, but I have really like I've had pretty bad dreams since the pandemic probably, but then especially in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they like recur. Like I have like recurring themes and like motifs that are like a little dark. That feels. Maybe I've talked about this on the show, but that's always extremely upsetting to me. The like the thing that I like really don't have control over, like my dreams. And then like waking up and being like, I guess I'm going to be in a weird mood because of like my subconscious's journey that we were on last night. So I feel like I'm recovering from that a little bit today. I'm pretty proud of myself. Yeah. I woke up and was like, hey, you had some bad dreams. You got to be really nice to yourself today. And I don't do a lot of self-talk like that. And I'm trying to be better at being like be extra nice to yourself. Because I think of myself as being nice to myself. But then I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't do a good job of like making an effort to be like extra nice.
Of being like, I had a self-punishing thing already happen. So now I'm going to address it.
Yeah. And I think it's funny. Now I'm just really talking at you. But I have these two coworkers that I talk to a lot. And I've told you about them off pod. But they're younger than me. And they, I feel, are very immersed in like internet world. And even more so than I feel like I am, which is silly to say, but feels true. And one of them particularly will be like, got myself a little treat today. You know, like, and you use the word treat like that too. But it feels very like millennial Gen Z-y to like talk about little treats and giving yourselves little treats. It's very like dystopian. Like you have to do something nice for yourself. Anyway, so being on this Groove thread with them has meant that I like get pretty much like daily reminders to like go and get myself a little treat, which is not something I do. I don't like.
What are your treats look like?
Well, I'm trying to figure it out because I don't really do it. But this coworker friend of mine was like took a picture of like a waffle cone with like a scrumptious looking ice cream ball and was like,
I think you mean a scoop of ice cream. Phrasing you were looking for.
Oh, I was said it the way I meant to say it. And she was like, I got this little treat for myself. So I think ice cream is a good one. For me, I think it's probably like more coffee, which is not great. And water. I'm working on it. I'm trying to figure out.
Your treats are need some work.
I know. It's like how I don't have snacks at my house. And you're always like, you don't have anything to snack on? I'm like, I just really don't.
Yeah, but I will say that I also don't have a lot of snacks in my house.
So that's why you forage?
And it's the kind of thing where I think because also growing up in my family's house, we didn't keep a lot of snacks in the house. And so I think the reason I always search when I'm at your house is because I'm like, oh, when you go to the friend's house, you get snacks.
You get those snacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Open up their cupboard and it's going to be like cake mix, frosting, Oreos, peanut butter pretzels,
goldfish,
Cheez-Its, maybe even a bag of chips, like drinks.
Yeah.
Ice cream bars. You do keep ice cream bars around though, which I
do, but kind of because of you. Remember you with the coconut bars, you were like, oh my God, keep these around for me. So I try to. I really do try to.
But wait, wasn't there something that you bought recently where you finished them and I was sad about it? I think I opened the freezer looking for it and it was gone.
It might have been the coconut bars. I will say
that. But what really got us is the Dove bars because they only do three to a box.
Yes. And I had two in a night two nights ago. And I almost had one before we talked today. Was debating that or like a glass of wine. It is 3:48. So I was like, okay, I need to figure out a different treat. So I just had a bowl of pasta.
Yum.
Yeah. So I guess just lunch. This sounds way more mucked up than I mean it to. It's really just more that I don't think rewards. Like I think of like rewarding myself. Anyway, I don't think it's a bad thing to have a tough little night of dreams and then be like, what am I going to do nice for myself? And I guess, Nina, today what I'm doing is drinking water and talking to my buddy.
Yeah, like that counts. That's great.
That counts. You're my treat.
You're my treat. You are my treat because...
You can't sustain food right now with your nausea.
So I can't even give myself a food treat. I had like a little packet of oyster crackers like an hour ago and it made me feel terrible. I was like,
I'm so sorry.
It's bad because that is my way of treating myself. It's like, oh, fix myself a little delicious...
Snack.
Bite.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I gave myself a little treat last night, though, because of feeling sick, where I was like, you know, I never really let myself do this, which is maybe interesting, especially given the topic of our podcast that you, dear listener, are listening to. But I never really binge TV. And last night, I couldn't really do anything when I got off work. Like, I didn't feel like hanging out. I wasn't going to like have a big dinner. And I was like, I just got to go for something. I'd been on my computer all day for work. So I didn't really want to shop online, which is a big treat for me. Just constant browsing. So I watched A League of Their Own. Almost the whole thing. I saved two episodes for tonight.
Me too. I'm up to episode 6.
Ah, me too.
That's so fun. Also because episode 6, spoiler alert, just gets a little sad. So I was like, I think I can stop here. Everything else was like candy.
Yeah. I only stopped because Allison came home.
You don't want her to see that you were looking at other women on camera.
she gets so jealous when I watch TV.
I thought it was really fun. And I thought it was really charming.
Totally agree. Really, really
liked it a lot. I love Darcy Carden.
Yeah, she's doing a good thing on that show. I gotta say, like, kind of all of them are. Like,
I feel like they definitely all are.
When you were talking to me about it, you were like, I knew that there would be a queer woman or two, but I didn't realize there would be, you know,
Only queer women,
which totally fair. And it's nice that they really give you, I'm going to say something nasty.
Please.
There's a woman for every craving. There's every flavor of queer women on that show.
Right, right. No, for real, they do a really good, it's a wide swath.
Yeah.
I know, it's so funny because or it's not that funny. Maybe it's interesting. It might be neither of those things. But I, Darcy Carden being tall is doing like a lot for me in a way that's interesting, because I was going to say that it's like, it's doing more for me than the queer representation, personally, I mean, than the queer representation. But actually, they're totally entwined. And I have told you about that essay that I have yet to write. But just that, like, about the queerness of tall women, just like you're inherently queering heteronormativity if you're taller than the man you're dating in that dynamic. And like that I'm not saying it is a queer relationship if two straight people date and the woman is taller, but it is queering the way that we understand the dynamic. And that's like what I think why people love Zendaya and Tom Holland, because I think it reads like a queer relationship in a way that I think on the one hand is a little messed up, because it's like totally just associated with our understandings of femininity and masculinity, which are limited, but also interesting. All to say, Darcy Carden being like this tall bisexual on camera and like actually being like significantly taller than her love interest, like kind of made me like blush in a way that the like kissing and sex scenes like did not. Cause it was just like, oh my God, like I feel kind of like represented. And I didn't know that it would mean that much to me, but it definitely does. It definitely does and did.
That's beautiful.
Thanks, Darcy. Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Darcy. Yeah, thanks all.
Thanks, everyone.
They did a great job. I'm really like, I know Darcy Carden's kind of like the sex symbol of the show, but they're all
sex symbols to me.
I mean, they're like all great. Like, I just think the cast is awesome. Like, I feel like there are some people who it feels like, yeah, they're being positioned to be the breakouts, but I'm like, everyone rocks.
Totally.
But that's not the show we have a podcast about.
No. That isn't the show we have a podcast about.
We have a podcast about the other
queer
show
pushing the envelope.
boundary breaking, first boundary of its kind.
Breaking.
Emily in Paris. And today we're going to talk about Emily Online.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a cultural conversation around Emily. And you found this piece that was in Variety that was sort of a review of season two, sort of like a commentary on the commentary on season two, and a commentary on the commentary that was the article about ambient TV that we talked about.
So now we're going to do a commentary on the commentary about the commentary on season two and the commentary about ambient television related to the commentary of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys handle it? Y'all ready for this?
Everyone's like so tired.
Yeah.
They're like, no. So the title of this article is by Daniel Daddario, which I have to ask, is he related to Alexandra Daddario?
I don't know. Who's that? Hannah's educational moment.
She was the woman in White Lotus. Anyway. The title is Why Does Emily in Paris Make People So Mad?
It is a good title.
And I think the title somewhat oversells.
Completely agree.
The article. As I guess titles during our like clickbait world are meant to do.
Yeah.
Because I think that what it gets to, what Daniel talks about, is like, it doesn't actually make anybody that mad. I think that's kind of like the point, is like, it's, in his words, it's not the best of anything, but it's good TV. Like, it's just is, and it's just sort of like low level noise. And so I'm like, yeah, it doesn't actually make anybody mad. It doesn't really make people feel much of anything except glazed over, which is now a thing that people like to opt into.
Yeah. I think that that's true. And I think that it probably, not to push back, but just say that, I guess, oh yeah, okay, to bring call you in.
No,
yeah.
Yeah, call me in.
No, I think call
I
you
dare
in.
You.
It's been a minute and a half. No, but I just think like I probably it does make it's interesting. Like he doesn't, I unless I didn't read it closely enough. I only read it once, but he doesn't really like get into like it's unapologetically white. Like it's so like it's pretty. He doesn't talk about how like money doesn't seem to be like an object, like things that I think people do get really mad about for really good reasons or really understandable reasons, relatable reasons. That's not really what he's saying. He just mentions that like it was nominated for an Emmy and a Golden Globe for best comedy, but it's like not that great. I just don't know that if for that title, I'm like, oh, I do think people are mad at the show but they're like pretty interesting and nuanced reasons that are much more to do with like what's getting made and at what scale and who gets to like make them.
I would also say like, am I wrong in remembering that when at the time when Emily in Paris was nominated for all of those awards, like people weren't very mad at the show. They were mad at like the HFPA and like, I like they read the nominators.
Yeah.
For, you know, for being flown out to Paris, wined and dined, and then coincidentally.
Right. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot about that. That's so funny. I mean, it's so sick, but it's pretty funny too.
Yeah, pretty funny. It's nice to be reminded of the charade.
For sure. That's true. Charade. It just made something that was already true transparent. Yeah. So,
yeah, which I always enjoy.
So here's what he says in the second paragraph of his piece. So it is that in its second season, Emily in Paris serves up more of the same and more of something TV can do well. Charming, watchable, low-friction entertainment in a setting that's fun to look at. It's not the best of anything, but it's good TV. Which I think is pretty much our thesis about the show.
Yeah, I think pretty spot on. Except that this person got paid to write this article for Variety.
Whereas we
are
getting ad money.
Yeah, that's true. So here's what I'm going to say. I think that in across a lot of what we've read about Emily in Paris in like the cultural conversation around it, I really enjoyed the ambient TV piece because I think that was about a larger cultural trend.
Mm-hmm.
But I think largely a lot of what we've read kind of grasps at straws for something truly substantive to say. Which is why I think this headline is
which
so
no one has ever said about our podcast.
Yeah, it's true. We're the only ones who are
saying something substantive.
Mm-hmm. But I just thought that this piece was a bit hollow, which was interesting because I think it was commenting on like the hollowness of the show itself and of Emily as a character.
It's also short.
Yeah, it is short in a way where I'm like, right, that's like you were just like hitting your word count.
But you know what? It's more fun, as always. It's more fun to take things seriously as if they've been really toiled over and this person really has something they're trying to say.
I love the idea of Daniel Daddario toiling over this piece.
This is his central piece of his writing. So we're going to treat it like that.
Yeah, we are. So get ready. Buckle up.
So buckle
buckle up. So this one quote that I picked out that I did think was pretty interesting because I think this compares it to a show that I think we have slightly different opinions on.
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel Daddario writes, in depicting an American whose sunny self-belief erodes the defenses of stuffy Europeans, Emily in Paris can play at times like a distaff Ted Lasso. And so, yes, we had to look up the word distaff.
And I think that if we had to, most of our listeners would also have to. So you want to give the definition? It's a great word. Yeah.
Let me pull it up again so I can quote it exactly properly.
I have it right here.
Oh my God.
A stick or spindle onto which wool or flax is wound for spinning. Or of or concerning women.
So just picture like the Sleeping Beauty spinning thing. Wheel where she pricks her finger.
Yeah. And then picture the fact that it concerns women.
Yeah.
And there you have it. Yeah. So he's basically saying it can play at times like the woman version of Ted Lasso.
And I gotta say, I could not watch Ted Lasso. Could not stomach it. Could not get through it.
Crazy to me.
I thought it was like so bad.
I didn't know that. Have we talked about that? Other than like you watching the pilot or like trying to watch the pilot?
I watched like probably 5 episodes.
Did you watch it with your girlfriend?
Yes.
hot take time. When you watch stuff with Allison, you like, sometimes I'm like, I don't understand. Like you like both agree to like dislike something and then you don't like it.
This. Listen, hear this now. I think that there's some stuff where I'm like, I'm gonna watch this alone because I wouldn't enjoy watching it with her. Like I feel that way about A League of Their Own, where I'm like, I really enjoyed that and scratches a lot of itches for me. I don't think she would like it very much. Mm-hmm. Like that's just like not the kind of TV and or entertainment that she enjoys. Ted Lasso, we were both. It had been recommended to us by a lot of people. And like, we both really love like straight sitcoms and like all these things. Mm-hmm. And I would say we went in very open and really wanting to like it.
Yeah.
And we watched a lot of it. Like it was like over Christmas or something.
What did you not like about it?
I thought the writing was like kind of like boring. I thought that Ted Lasso himself was like kind of blank to me as like a main character. Like I didn't find it particularly funny. Hmm. I didn't laugh a lot. And I had heard it was really funny. And so it just like really didn't get me. And I think other things where like, I think a comparable show that I struggled with that people really love and highly recommended was Schitt's Creek. And I like would give Schitt's Creek another chance because even though I think I watched probably also, yeah, like the first like 6 or 7 episodes of it and I wasn't into it. Like I just couldn't latch on, but I was like, oh, but I like a lot of these characters and I like a lot of the actors and like, I can see like a really great thing brewing. I think something about like the purity of Ted Lasso like rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like it felt so
too
like,
earnest.
Yeah, but I don't always like hate earnest thing. Like I love like Parks and Rec and like.
I think Parks and Rec is earnest, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And I think Schitt's Creek was pretty earnest.
Huh.
Ted Lasso just didn't hit for me.
Yeah.
What do you love about Ted Lasso?
I was going to say, for listeners who are like, well, I no longer trust these hosts, know that I love Schitt's Creek and Ted Lasso. There's a place for everyone. I thought Ted Lasso was really funny. Like, I laughed out loud. Like, thought it was super, super funny. And I like dramedy. Like, I need sort of like a romantic interest to be interested in that I care about, a romantic relationship in a show for me to be pulled in, usually. And I was, like, very compelled by Roy Kent. Like, I thought... Would not be surprising to anybody who loves the show, but like
I do like him. I did like that character.
His romantic storylines are very moving to me. Like not just like fun and sexy, but like the themes that they get at him and Keely, like about like trust and showing up and accountability, and like so much of their love story is about accountability and being adult enough to hold each other to certain standards. And I was really moved by that. Again, on theme, Hannah Waddingham being like sexy and powerful and very tall was like very cool for me to watch and like still is cool for me to watch. Like I look at the way she gets dressed professionally because I'm like, whoa, you're like actually a tall woman who like people mm-hmm. care about making sure you like look nice. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think. And I also like I like sports. So like I'm not saying you don't. That's not in contrast mm-hmm. to you. I just mean like I'm also compelled by like the competitive mm-hmm. you know, plot points. Like I'm interested mm-hmm. in that. So, so I feel like getting back to this article, like the comparison of Emily in Paris to Ted Lasso to me is like, I'm like, oh, that's like offensive. And like, I say that as somebody who talks about Emily in Paris more than anyone, like, you know, but I'm like, no, Ted Lasso is like doing something. I actually think Ted Lasso is doing something. It's like mm-hmm. about soft masculinity and it's, and that's like cool. And they're doing it. I think they're doing it well. And it's mm-hmm. funny and all of that, all the things I just said. And Emily in Paris is like pretty, I would say like passionately, dedicatedly apolitical in terms of its intention. I don't think anything is apolitical. Like I don't think as a show, it actually is without politics, but I don't think they're trying to say much of anything.
Yeah. I think they're passionately trying to do nothing.
Right. And I think Ted Lasso is trying to like do something something and like get like the best performances out of some people. And like the directing is interesting. Like they're mm-hmm. doing different things.
I can hear that.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing that we have a friendship where we can move on through that? Yeah.
Well, time will tell, honestly.
Yes.
I'm curious if you'll ever go back to either of those shows and feel differently about them. I will say like, I watched Ted Lasso last summer, which was like one of the worst summers of my life. And it was like so heartfelt. Mm-hmm. And I like needed, was already going to be crying a lot. And it was really nice to be able to like feel, but not about my life. Like it was a really mm-hmm. nice release valve, emotional release valve, which also I would say Emily in Paris is not in like a pretty important way, which is why it's a wild comparison. Because I'm like, no, Ted Lasso made people cry.
It is pretty wild that Emily in Paris like veers so far from emotional response. Like it really stays away from like getting a rise out of anybody in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it almost feels closer to a children's show in that way.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
Where like it's more about like there's a problem that needs to be solved.
Yeah.
And the stakes are quite low.
Yeah.
And, like, it's the same little cast of characters that live in the town. And, like, they'll all always be there. So no one, so, like, the stakes can never be so high that they would cause a major life change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so funny.
It's like Mr. Rogers.
I was going to say, it really is what you described. Like, that is. It is. It's like just, yeah, you're so right. There's no, I haven't like teared up at anything in like a negative or positive way.
No.
Or like in sadness or happiness.
It's interesting because there's, you know, there's a lot of different dynamics going on. I mean, we've talked about this a lot where it's like so many instances where it's like a damn shame they don't dig deeper. Like the stuff about the fact that Emily struggles so much with honesty is like kind of like an interesting quality for a main character to have that they just ignore as a trait.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she lies all the time, but they never reckon with it.
Yeah.
Or they never reckon with it in like a moral way. They reckon with like fallout from a lie, but there's never a thing where it's like, maybe be honest with people.
Yeah. It's also such like a difference between this show and Ted Lasso. I mean, we could go on and on, regardless of how you feel about either show. Ted Lasso is like very concerned with consequences. It's like pretty much, I would say like you could distill it to be like, and maybe that's true with like any good show or like any good drama, maybe. But it's, yeah, the characters face real consequences. And that drives plot. Consequences drive plot in a way that I'm like, I don't know that that's what happens. And Emily in Paris. You pulled a second quote, though, that I think gets to it.
Yeah, which is just that, this is another quote from Daniel Daddario, which is just, being a good hang counts for something.
It counts for, like, a many million dollar deal with Netflix.
Yeah. And, like, I guess it does. It really does. The fact that you can just tune in and tune out and chill and not have emotional response. Like, I feel like there's a reality where someone who, like, similarly was like, man, I had the worst summer of my life, but at least I had Emily in Paris to just...
I mean, I think that was a lot of us when it came out. It was like, man, I'm in a fucking pandemic. We're quarantined. There's no sight of a vaccine. Not to, like, constantly be belaboring that point, but it is wild that, crucial. Like...
I think the timing was uncanny.
It was escapist and easy and low stakes when... Not that we don't need that now. I certainly still do. But definitely needed that in October of 2020 in like a pretty big way, globally.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's something that, to bring it back to all of the shows we're talking about, I think A League of Their Own, or that's interesting to me about it, is like how political it is. And I'm like, you know, nothing's perfect. But to me, I'm like, does a pretty good job. Like, I think like it's like intersectional and like it's... queer and like it just is, but it's also like very joyful and character driven and all these things. Like, it's not made too heavy or anything by like touching on those things. It's just like deepened in a really nice way. And in some ways, A League of Their Own also feels like a product of COVID era, I think, in the ways that those certain issues are like very top of mind, and like certain things around identity and representation are so top of mind, which feels like maybe not, I don't know exactly where that aligns with like COVID time, but it does feel like a type of politic that's like more relevant in the last few years.
100%.
And it's interesting to see like different byproducts of the same turmoil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, just having like more than one trans character in a show is like pretty cool. And I'm using that term in the most umbrella version of things, because we haven't, Emily in episode 6, and I don't think by the end of the season people are like out in varying ways, you know, like, but it really, like, there, like you were saying, like a spectrum of queerness being represented, like that is so new that, yeah, I don't think it's wrong to say that in the last 2 or 3 years, in tandem with COVID, that has become much more normalized in a big way. I'm going to read the last paragraph of his very short but very intentional toiled over essay article. Quote, that ebullient setting, that's how I say that. Is that how you say that?
Yeah, I mean, I literally never say it. I just read it.
It's one of those words again. Okay. That ebullient setting can too easily be read as all that's going on in the picture, and maybe the fact that Emily in Paris can be interpreted in such wildly differing ways, as among TV's very best, as a harbinger of the end times, or as a fine show that manages to raise spirits and be about something, suggests that there's some art in the formula after all. Maybe it feels not that nuanced to us because this is kind of what we have been saying, but it's like, I guess I would raise eyebrows at anybody who thinks it's TV's very best. I think that's like bizarre. But he does also note earlier in the article, like, he's like, it's kind of new, it's a new phenomenon to expect high art in television. And that's true. That's like of the mm-hmm. last 20 years. And so, mm-hmm. or 25 years, I guess, mm-hmm. at this point, my gosh. But that's like so recent mm-hmm. that it's kind of a return. Mm-hmm. Like we've talked about it being a return mm-hmm. in some ways to a different time. And it feels like he's touching on that, totally. Where it's like it's not holding itself to the standard that has been set by like HBO since 2000 mm-hmm. or whatever. It's like, I mean, to put it really simply, mm-hmm. it's letting itself be something entirely different. It, not because of like some high moral ground, but just because like Netflix has discovered that still makes money. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, it's cotton candy. It's not like creme brulee. How about that?
Love that. Love that's your that. Treat.
Which one? Cotton candy flavored creme
brulee. Do you like cotton candy?
I do like cotton candy. Do you like cotton candy?
I don't like cotton candy very much.
Really? I'll get it as a treat. You're right. I'll get it as a treat anytime I go to the fair. Which hasn't been.
I guess I would get it at a fair.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'm not like going out of my way to get it. I wouldn't get the packaged cotton candy like thing that you could get at Blockbuster. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, man. Not that. I would never.
We were talking the other night about movies that you know of, movies that stick out in your head as movies that like were on the shelves at Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And it came up because someone was talking about the movie The Scorpion King.
Oh, I don't know that one. That wasn't one for me.
I didn't know it either, but I guess it was like somehow in the same universe as The Mummy.
Funny.
And someone was like, oh, I can see the like DVD covers. Like covering the wall.
Yeah.
I really do feel like there are movies like that.
Yeah. Titanic, I think, was that for me. Mm. We owned it, though, at some point. But I just remember that being present. Oh, my gosh. Blockbuster.
I know.
What a treat. That was a treat to go there.
Oh, my God.
I passed by, you know, the Blockbuster we went to, I don't know if you know this, was on Berwyn and Broadway. So there's been so many things, even since you've lived here in Chicago, that have gone through that. But anytime I drive by that, I think of going to that Blockbuster. Pretty fun. RIP.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We had a Blockbuster growing up, but then there was a video store closer to my house called Potomac Video. And it was the kind of thing where I could, like, memorize. Like there were movies, like, in the same way that if you were, like, bookmark things on Netflix, like, to your to-watch list.
Yeah.
Like, I would, like, know, I don't know, like, which DVDs I'd want to come back for. Oh, man, I was so hooked.
So sweet.
It's very much gone. But there was a video store in Andersonville, Specialty Video in Chicago. And yeah. I still rented movies there my first 3 years in the city, for sure.
Yeah, that's wild.
Which is...
That's where Hope would go. My sister would go.
They did
for
great.
All of her gay erotica.
Yeah, they had a great selection.
I just remember watching Y Tu Mamá También when I was like 11. Like twice over, and like I can't remember anything about it, and I know it's like a classic, like people love it, and I'm like, it literally for me was just something that like was on in the background for like a few days while Hope was watching it.
I do feel like there are movies like of that ilk
uh-huh.
or more like movies that you watch when you're at that
laundrette.
Age oh my god, I love it. My Beautiful Laundrette, where like no matter how smart of a kid you are, like Y Tu Mamá También to you will always just be like gay. Like
yeah.
It's like the book The Lovely Bones. I'm just like rape.
Oh yeah.
Cause I like yeah. Yeah. you know, read it when I was like fifth grade, like way too young. Where like I really liked the book, but I could not get anything out of it besides the shock thing.
Of the thing, of the learning about the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting.
I know there are more.
I gotta revisit that movie.
I mean, me too. I'm like, what else is on that? What else is like that to me where I'm just like, gay.
Yeah, what else?
I don't know. I gotta think of it.
If we don't get a gay storyline in Emily in Paris season three, I will be absolutely shocked because I'm like, why not? Like, I don't understand.
I mean, they totally have the characters that are gay or gay coded or whatever are like also like the ones who are pretty desexualized. So I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
No,
I just think it would be like, so it would just be confusing to me where I'm like, you have your footing. You got renewed for another season after this. A League of Their Own has come out and been a hit.
But if like, it turns out that they're all gay.
I'll watch it. Well, it's the Darren Star universe. So they all could be either like turfy or gay. Those are like the two types of characters.
They're either going to be Stanfords or...
or any of the cis women.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for talking about it with me.
Thanks for talking about it with me.
I'm excited to get back to it in a couple of weeks. We'll do another character study.
Yeah, can't wait.
Okay, ciao, Bella. Feel better.
Thanks, you too.
Oh, thanks.
Hope you get your period.
Hope you find out. You've been listening to Nina, Hannah, and Emily in Paris. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really love for you to let us know with an Apple review. We've been reading them at the end of every episode, and it's been so fun. We'll read them even if they're bad. We'd prefer them to be good, just like for our hearts and our egos and as a vote of confidence. But be honest and leave a review regardless, because we want to know what you think of the show.
We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode. We're going to be doing a character study.
Till then, be sure to subscribe or follow the show, and that way you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Pretty fun.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Woohoo.